Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day. Big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind. Rolling down the lane in the big red bus, see Red, Fred, and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss. From the Jordan days to the present fuss, it's gold in the convo, so ride with us.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago on a beautiful October evening. I look to my right, and it's the great one, Doug Tonis, but hold on 1 second, because behind him, do we have a big surprise for you. As he gets up into the middle aisle in a solid defensive stance, ready to take a charge, we have the GOAT, Will Gottlieb. How you doing, brother?
What an intro. How did you come up with glorious monstrosity? I've always wondered about that.
Yeah, it just came to me in a fever dream.
Just came to you? I love it.
I mean, we kind of ran with it. You know, I used to spend the first, 5-10 minutes of the show just describing this metaphysical boss, and until we were eventually inundated with enough angry
that.
Emails to not get off that, we decided to move on to the glorious monstrosity and another direction. But I'm glad you like it.
Well, I love it, and I'm glad to be back with you guys. Always a pleasure.
You know, I'm glad you're here, Will, because now you get to listen to Doug crow for a bit. Let's get this out of the way right now. Doug, do you want to take the
You want to get the charge thing out of the way? I mean, look, we could just shortchange it, and you can just say, Doug, you were right. I was wrong. I'm sorry for questioning you. And we don't even have to talk about it then.
You know, the GOAT's here. I think this is the most important question. We don't know for certain if he hurt his wrist on that particular play, correct?
On the charge, I think it was. I'm not 1,000% sure, but I'm pretty sure it was.
Was it possible that he was protecting his groin without a cup, and therefore that's how he hurt his wrist?
I think really what it comes down to is Cupgate again. And, if he had just been wearing protection where he needed to, then maybe we would have our backup center.
All right, Doug, why don't you wax poetic about the play?
I'm not going to wax poetic about a Bulls guy getting hurt. I'm just saying, planning to take charges is dumb. It's a dangerous play. And also, charges are negatively correlated to good defense and to wins. And so it's not an effective teach either. It is true. I actually did the research. Unlike you, who just looked at one exact data point, I looked at every data point. It's negatively correlated to wins across the league and to good defense across the league, despite the fact that the Thunder led the league in charges.
Will, do you believe him?
I mean, if you did the research, I would love to hear more about it.
Are you sure?
It's not real extensive.
Was this research done at Northeast
Idaho
University?
I did one whole year of research. I just looked at last year. And overall, the more charges you had, the less wins and the worse your defense was. Like, if you just add up all the teams.
I don't think that's a representative
sample. Well, your sample size is one team, so why don't you just shut the hell up? I mean, that's ridiculous. You, came up with one team, and you're, basing your whole thing on this, ignoring the fact that it's less than one possession per game. It's, a charge every 3 out of 4 games that you're getting out of it. We just lost the best center on the team for, 20% of the season over a stupid preseason play. It's just dumb. It's a dumb thing to teach.
Well, the GOAT doesn't agree with you. Let him counter. Give him a chance to provide his thoughts.
I mean, okay, so I tend to agree with Doug. I think big picture, we're talking about a team that took 13 charges last year. Over the course of one game, you're getting, 103 possessions if you're the Bulls. It's just not meaningfully changing anything, I don't think. I will say, and that's just the Bulls. The second most was 51 taken by the Lakers last year. That's a 12 charges off of second place. It's less than one per game, even if you're the elite of the elite at it. And so I don't think that it's really moving the needle. I do think that there's something to be said for trying to win on every margin. And that's something that the Bulls have really talked a lot about. Billy has talked a lot about, they need to win the possession battle. They need to add more offensive rebounds with turning the ball over less. They need to get to the foul line more. All those things do add up. And so if you add a few extra charges into the mix, then it probably helps. I think it's a pretty minuscule thing. I mean, even like the median number of charges is like 25. That's like one, you know, less than one every four games.
Why do you think it's such a focus then for coach?
You know, I think it's I think that they're like kind of symbolic of effort and playing to a certain style and like being aggressive and executing within that style, which is, I think, kind of like the bigger picture, like broad strokes, what the Bulls are trying to do. So I think it's like, if we can just take some more charges, it will show that we're doing all these other things. And that's kind of why we want it to be part of our identity. But I do think it's like one of those sort of like old school basketball mentality things that, like, yeah, probably in high school when, you know, rim protection is harder to come by and there aren't as many guys who can like really deter shots at the rim, that's one of the ways that you do it. And I don't know, I think in some ways like the Bulls are trying to build like a college system. Like they're building a program that plays a certain style and trying to develop players through that. They're not like, you know, swinging for the fences in the draft and making big trades or bringing in free agent acquisitions. Like they're kind of emulating a college or even like a high school basketball program in a lot of ways. And I don't mean that pejoratively. I maybe it sounds that way, but like I think that's just kind of like included in that.
The Zach Collins thing, I'm not actually don't think that this injury, like fluke injuries happen. It happened on charge. It could have happened on something else. Like my main point really isn't that like Zach Collins or someone else is going to get injured. My main point is like 2 out of 3 calls on a charge block go against you. It's a terrible analytic play. You get no benefit if you go for a charge and you don't get it. You know, it's like if you try and block a shot and you don't block it, you still get a contest. If you try for a charge and the guy just goes around you, like you've done nothing. So it's just like, it's just a bad play. It's a bad analytical play. And the reason why coaches love it is because, you know, human beings have really weird, dumb blind spots about stupid things. It's why post play dominated the league for 40 years. And even though analytically it made sense to shoot threes for 40 years, it took like 40 years for like the old school coaches to finally get beaten over the head by the analytical guys to like start doing it. And the charge thing, it's like the same thing. Like when you just, it's just a bad analytical play. And I think it's exactly what Will said. It's like it's symbolic of energy and, you know, like rah-rah. And so people are like, yeah, we're just going to do this because we think it's this great thing when you get one. But, you know, the odds are against you. Like, it's like if you got a charge in your favor and like 80% of the time you tried for it, I'd be like, hell yeah, go for charges. Like, but that's just not the reality.
I do wonder if there's like a momentum element to it where like if you can get one of those kinds of plays, you know, you can swing the momentum and like take a possession away from the other team. But it's like, again, it's such a small sample in the grand scheme of a game, let alone a season, that I don't feel like
the momentum will, if you block a shot. If you block a shot, you get momentum. If you stop them in the other way, you get momentum.
If they had a lot of rim protectors, they would block more shots.
Well, they're not capable of taking charges. Like, we get way more blocks than charges. You say we can't block shots. How many block shots do we have a year compared to charges?
Yeah, like, I was actually going to mention that more? Too. My basketball reference is loading quickly, but I think Vooch alone had more block shots. He had 52 blocks last year. The team took 13 charges. So that's the margins we're talking about.
I think it's really hard to measure the tertiary benefits of
It's really easy to measure. It's really easy to measure. It's worth a possession. It's exactly easy to measure. It's worth 13 possessions a year. 13 possessions a year is what it was worth. You know how many fouls we got called trying it? It's like real easy to measure. That's the thing. You say it's hard to measure, but it's not. It's not. It's simple to measure. Like you say things that are just bullshit. It's simple to measure.
Hold on a second. Calm down.
It's simple to measure. The math is there.
No, it's not easy to measure. And I'll bring up a personal example just from my son. One example, he was the second leading scorer on his team last year, his high school team. But you know what my favorite play of the entire season was? The charge he took against Schaumburg Christian in the playoffs, because there was distinct momentum change for the team. You saw how the team reacted. People were going nuts on that one play. So there are just some plays that are just more momentous. The dunk on a breakaway, Rose dunking on Dragic is a more momentous play than, although statistically equal, than a layup from Keith Bogans. Yes, they're both technically equal, but they're not. there's a different level of excitement and momentum. It's just a fact.
Do you know what the word fact means? Do you know what the word fact means?
Yeah, I know what the word fact means.
Okay, then what is your research? What is your research that says
my research is I was there witness the momentum
that I have had. I followed up what happens after a charge, and it is meaningfully different than what happens after a different play. Have you looked that up? No, you haven't. You don't know jack shit about it. You just made that up and you called it a fact. You completely fabricated it. I'm talking about charges in general. It is not a fact that charges like generate all of this momentum. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. But you've created that in your head with no evidence whatsoever, just like you correlated charges to wins. And then I just did some research really quick, and it turns out you're completely wrong.
You know, let's talk to the guy who tried out for the Windy City Bulls. Will, can you help elevate this discussion?
I did attempt to take a charge in the Windy City Bulls tryout, and I was called for a blocking foul. So I think we can wrap it up there.
Were you wearing a cup? That's all I want to know.
I was not wearing a cup, but I was asking around incognito just to see if other people were, but that's proprietary information. I can't share that with you.
Maybe that was the reason you were cut. Those incognito cup requests could lead to removal from the roster.
Will, have you actually been brave enough to ask someone if they wear a cup after Fred's conversation? Like, do you have like a close relationship with someone in the locker room that you can be like, hey, anyone here wear a cup? Do you know?
Absolutely not.
You know, Doug's taking a victory lap here for the news, the recent news, and rightly so. But let's get something straight. I didn't jump on the last episode when Topic's testicle blew up, but I was right about that. I guarantee you that's one guy that's going to be wearing a cup for the rest of the season. Let's be honest. If you had to pick between an injured wrist or an injured testicle, which one would you choose? Will, what would you prefer to have?
It's hard to argue against the wrist.
Hard to argue with that logic. I would definitely rather hurt my wrist.
So what's the moral of the story? Take charges and wear a cup. And let's go on to the next
topic. Maybe it's wear a cup and don't take charges. Have you considered that option?
It's like, you know, it's the argument of like, you know, staying out of harm's way, and then you won't be in a position to have that sort of injury.
Well, how do you know they don't wear cups?
I don't know. They might. But I'm just not going to ask.
So you have no statistical information. Be careful now, Will. Doug might go off on you.
Can you search the lockers? Can you search the lockers, you know, like while after everyone
leaves?
We have,
I don't know if you guys have like seen in the back of it, like I'll post these videos on Twitter or like other reporters will. You can see into the lockers, and I'll keep my eye out. I can't say I've been looking for them, so maybe it's gone under my radar, but I'll keep an eye out from now on.
The big red bus where you get the hard news, you know, that's as
sources tell the big red bus.
So let's get this bus back on the road. We're kind of a little bit off the road and going through some very bad
news. We're off the road in a ditch.
Let's get to the news of the day, which I find devastating. You know, I think there's a lot of signs this is headed for a disaster so far this year. I originally had said 46 wins after they acquired Okoro, fifth seed. But, you know, Coby White's the one player on this team that they can't afford to lose. He's just got massive gravity. He's the only player with that. And if he's going to be out for any long period of time, I don't even think there's a chance, you know, we're going to be anywhere near that. So I predict right now he'll probably be out till Thanksgiving. What say you, Will? Like, what's the story here? And do you feel like this is already going down a bad path with these Bulls? But first, your comments on Coby.
Yeah, just first Coby. Obviously, a huge bummer to lose him now for at least the first six games, although like reevaluated in 2 weeks, which is the message that we got on the press release. He's going to be back in 2 weeks. It's always that's next time they'll check. And so talking to Billy today after practice, he was kind of saying that, you know, there was optimism that he was going to be able to go not just for the regular season opener, but for the last game of the preseason. That obviously didn't work out. There was only one day between the Denver preseason game and the Minnesota preseason game. And so they said, all right, well, we've got like 5 days between the last preseason game and the start of the regular season. Let's just, you know, hold him out and get him ramped up. I think the conditioning was the big factor there. So he started practicing on Saturday, and I guess he felt some tightness or some discomfort after practice. And they are pulling back. I mean, I asked today, like, is he being shut down? And that was met with like some resistance. It's not like they're completely putting him in a boot and, you know, shutting him down for two full weeks. He's still going to be with the team. He's going to be doing weights and stuff like that, but they're not going to be having him doing like running, contact, cutting and things like that, which is really, I think, the last hurdle for him to be able to get back. And so they'll test it out again in 2 weeks. But these soft tissue injuries, calf things, like, you don't want to mess with those. I think they are right to be cautious about it, especially with him being in a contract year. But at the same point, I mean, to what you're saying, like, pretty devastating way to start the season to have your primary go-to scoring option, you know, on the shelf for at least 2 weeks and probably longer than that.
Yeah. No, I mean, the only thing I think that's rough to me is that you're just waiting for this to, like, require a surgery, right? Like, if you just look at everything that ever happens with the Bulls, it starts with, like, oh, we had this guy, you know, we tried to ramp him up, and then all of a sudden he still had, like, whatever, and we weren't able to diagnose it correctly the first time, and then we went back and we did another MRI and another whatever, and it turns out there's a tear or some other thing going on, and that just feels like the story all the time here. Like, to me, it's deeply concerning that basically they didn't have Kobe doing all this stuff. The first time he tries to do it, whatever happened, however they described it, whatever happened, based on what Will just told us, is that it was bad enough that they are stopping him from running, cutting, and doing all of these other things. Like, that's a pretty severe, like, pullback, right, on his activity. If you thought maybe he was going to play in a basketball game, and now you're saying don't run or cut or jump, that means whatever happened in that was fairly significant. It wasn't like, well, I just haven't ran and jumped in a while and I'm a little sore. Like, it was something was significant. And so, you know, it just makes you nervous about, like, what is going to come down in 2 weeks. Like, and I've seen a couple of Bulls fans say, like, Kobe's out for 2 weeks and Collins is out for a month. And I want to reiterate what Will said, because I think it's really important, is we're going to reevaluate at those time periods. Like, reevaluation usually means another time period after that. Like, even if Kobe starts to ramp up and is good, like, it's going to be a ways after that. So this is going to be a really rough start for the Bulls. And, you know, like, that, yeah, it's like a bucket of ice water dumped on the fan base, you know, at the beginning of this season, for sure.
You know, and maybe I missed it, Will. I'm really irritated that I can't get any real answers on, like, how did this injury occur? I hear it was in Miami. Okay, if it was in Miami, what was the date? Was it August 3rd? Or was it the last day of August? Because that means a lot. Like, if it happened early in August, we're talking about 3 full months and he's still not back. That is a significant injury. If it's 6 weeks ago, you know, like, even if it was August 31st, we're talking about now almost 8 weeks and he's still not 100%. Again, a significant injury, but it makes a big difference. Why is this treated like nuclear secrets? Why can't anybody tell you guys what's going on? How did it happen? Where did it happen? What was the date?
Yeah, I think I'm 100% with you that there's, like, you know, and I don't want to, like, you know, make it seem like there's some sort of, like, nefarious, you know, trickery going on from the Bulls side. I don't know what the deal is. I know that, like, the NBA injury report requires teams to put out updates every single day before games. That does not happen in the preseason. It doesn't happen during the offseason. And so it's on the player, the agent, the team to offer up that information. The Bulls didn't do that until media day for whatever reason. I don't know the exact date of it. I also heard that it was at the Miami mini camp. I'm not sure when exactly that was. But to your point, I mean, the lack of clarity there, I think, especially with the press release, like, you know, we were talking about on our show today, Dave was saying that, like, he didn't even recognize that that meant that he wasn't going to be playing for the next 2 weeks until Matt had pointed it out to him because of the way that it was phrased. And then you compare that to something like the Memphis Grizzlies PR today when Ty Jerome was, they announced that he was going to be out with a calf strain also. Theirs was, quote, "The Memphis Grizzlies today announced that Ty Jerome has been diagnosed with a high-grade right calf strain, which he sustained in the first quarter of the Grizzlies preseason game against Miami Heat on October 17th. Jerome will be reevaluated in 4 weeks. Further updates will be provided as appropriate." So, like, just the clarity there, you know, a clear timeline of what it is. I think part of the issue is the nature of calf strains being really difficult to resolve. You know, I had one last year. It just it takes forever to get over it. As soon as you think you're, like, clear, in the clear, you've been doing, like, your physical therapy exercises, it's been a couple weeks since you last feel pain, and then you go out and you start playing or you start running, whatever it is, and you feel it tighten up again, it just like it lingers and it doesn't really go away. And so I do think, again, that they are being right and like, you know, they're handling it the right way to not really push him through this, especially at the start of the season. So I think part of it is just that Cavs are tough to diagnose. I don't know if there will like eventually, if there's anything beyond just rest and rehab, if there could be potentially a surgery, I don't know. You know, I don't think that's been the case for other players with calf strains, but I just know that these are in particular becoming more and more of an issue in the NBA and teams are justifiably taking them very seriously. But it's just, it is frustrating to feel like, okay, he's coming back and now it's two more weeks. You have to let it calm down and then you start to ramp up again.
One quick follow-up, Doug, before I go to you. It's not the nature of the injury. I understand your point. That's true. It's this nature of this organization. I'll just point to last year. I read you guys religiously. The fact that Lonzo Ball missed the entire second half of the year and there was never any indication to me at all for the first 2 to 3 weeks after the All-Star break that he would be out the whole year. Did you feel that way? I didn't get any clarity from the organization on that. It's insane that he was out almost the whole year with a wrist injury. Am I right on that? What did you feel as an insider there working with the Bulls organization trying to get updates on this injury?
Yeah, I mean, from what I can recall, and I don't know that I could say this with 100% accuracy just without looking back at some of the notes, but my recollection of it is that like they were trying to get him to come back and, you know, it just never really happened. I think the same thing was true with Trey Jones's foot sprain. That was like something that they never really ruled him out for the year. They, you know, they rule guys out when they have to have a surgery or, you know, they're clear about those kind of diagnoses. But yeah, I think with these soft tissue injuries, it's just a lot harder to do that. And part of it, I think, is that they are trying to protect the player and not, you know, put them in a position where they have to rush back. But I also agree with you that like it would be great if they were just more transparent about how long these things take, because now you're not in these situations where people are frustrated because they don't know what's really going on here or how serious these injuries really are.
It would have been so simple for them just to say he strained his calf. There have been a rash of torn Achilles that started with strained calf muscles. We don't know how long this is going to take to recover. The start of the season is in jeopardy. We hope he'll be back before that, but we just don't know, and we're going to be conservative. You could have said that at media day. Like, you don't have to say, like, oh, he's on track to play in the first game. We're confident he's going to be out there. Like, you could just be honest and say, like, I don't know what's going on. Hey, guys, this is really serious. Have you seen what's happened around the league with all these Achilles injuries? We don't want that to be Kobe. No one is upset that, like, Kobe's not being rushed back. It's just that every time the Bulls have an injury, they put out the most optimistic timeline possible, and then, like, right before the due date, they change it. And it's like, if you know he's going to rest for two more weeks, you know, like you just found that out Saturday, that feels like there's no way before Saturday then that you could have been confident he was going to play. Like, you just don't go through that like that. Like, it just means you knew it was like way up in the air. So just say that. Just say that. Like, there's no reason to be like, oh, we think for sure this is going to happen. Like, it's just insanity. And the thing is, they've been torched for it for like now two regimes. Like, this isn't even just the Acme regime. Like, the Garpax regime was torched for this, going back to the Luol Deng thing when he had like meningitis and they gave him a spinal tap, or when he had like the leg fracture and they said, like, we encourage active rest, and he plays through it and they misdiagnosed it. Like, they've just, this organization, like, I don't know what they're doing, like, when it comes to medical stuff. Like, it's not that hard to just say, like, I don't know. Like, no one's yelling at you for that. You know, like, people understand that. So it's frustrating just that it came out. And it is what it is. Like, I hope they let Kobe rest as long as he needs to. You know, I don't want to rush him back. But I just wish they were a little bit better about the way they reported this stuff, like Will said. You know, comparing it to, like, what the Grizzlies said. That just feels like a much better way to go about it.
Great example. I have a quick question on the other three injuries now. Like, first of all, Okoro, I think, is hurt. And I would not be surprised if he's out a month. He's got a knee issue. He didn't look right to me at all as someone who's watched tons of his games in the preseason. So he's hurt. We have Io hurt, and we have Patrick Williams hurt. Out of those three, which ones are you concerned about the most? Like, hey, this could be a little bit longer than expected. Or are you pretty confident all of them will be back soon?
The bulk of the questions, injury-related questions today at practice were about Kobe, so we didn't get as much information on the other guys that you mentioned. We saw Io wearing like a soft cast on his hand during the game on the broadcast, but I saw him shooting today at practice. I don't think that any of these guys will be like super long-term things, but again, just with these, like, and just going back to Kobe for a second, like, I do really think that they felt like they could get him back for the start of the season, but that it, once it tightened up, they had to change the trajectory of when he would be back. I don't know what it will look like for these other guys, but like, if they're also soft tissue injuries, whether it's like the groin or, in Okoro's case, it's a knee, it's going to depend on how they ramp up and how they, perform once they are able to like get to a stage where they're back in contact. So, that's something I can ask about tomorrow as far as those other three guys. Collins, at least we know, is like a broken wrist, so he will be out with a cast for 4 weeks. They'll reevaluate him. That's like a more clean timeline. With these softer tissue injuries, I think it's always just a little bit more up in the air.
Did you see Okoro and Williams at practice? You said you saw Io.
I didn't, but I'm sure they were there. I just wasn't, I didn't notice them. We typically just like walk in. Basically, the way it works is like practice starts at a certain time. There's media after, so we don't know how long practice will go. We'll show up to the media room, do some work, hang out with the other reporters that are there, and then once they open up, we'll go in and we'll go straight to media. Sometimes, Billy will come over right away and we start. Other times we'll be hanging out in there for 10, 15, 20 minutes watching guys shoot around and stuff, and today we just got right into media. So I just wasn't really paying that close of attention to what was going on the courts.
Doug, do you have a question before mine?
No, you go nuts, Fred. You're the point guard. You're the star point guard of the show.
I got control of the bus together. Here we go. I want to run through the list of players who are not under contract for next year on this current roster. I'd like you to say yes or no. And you can add a sentence or two in commentary if you feel this player is going to be back next year. If it's greater than 50% in your opinion or if it's less than 50%.
Okay.
So let's start out with Vooch.
Vooch, I think, is probably less than 50% chance. I do think that it's a high likely. If you ask me, like, will he finish this season, I would say over 50% chance. But once he expires, I don't know that, like, Arturs would even want to bring him back. But to me, I just feel like Vooch will probably want to go, take a smaller role on a team where he has a chance to win. Like, I think he expressed that, publicly, that he was, like, trying to compete for, winning at a high level at this point in his career, and unless the Bulls like win the lottery and are on their way to the top, which I'm not really gonna sit here and prophesize. I know that's really more your thing than mine, but I think Vooch probably less than 50% chance will be back next year.
I will said something else. I would have just thrown myself off this building. I'm in my basement now, so that wouldn't have been a very far fall. I would have fallen upwards, but yeah, I would say less than 50%.
Aren't you concerned at all, Will, about how bad he looked in this preseason? I mean, heard a lot of talk about Okoro, but I mean, oh my God, did Vooch look awful.
He's a veteran that doesn't care.
Not his best at all.
Zach Collins.
I think there's a greater than 50% chance that he will be back. I think if you lose Vooch, you kind of need a bridge the gap kind of center, and Collins... we'll see how he performs this year. But last year, they were really good defensively with him. It was a small sample. But I think he does a lot of the same things that Vooch does in terms of he's a good passer. He's a good screener. He's, developed some good chemistry with Giddy in the pick and roll. I think he's a pretty good positional defender. And I think he can kind of help grease the wheels of the offense. So I think he's like a good center that they could have for like a 2 or 3 year contract as they try to figure out their long-term option.
We love continuity. So, this will be the new continuity, bringing back Zach Collins and Kevin Huerter to the team.
He's a fine bridge. He's a fine bridge to whatever we end up drafting.
I like him. No Kevin problem Huerter, with him. Yeah.
Kevin Herter, I also think will be back. I don't know what type of contract he'll be on, but I mean, he was like, he was awesome for the Bulls last year. Obviously he was not like their first option when it came to like the closing, you know, or the fifth starter down the stretch. They had so many injuries with Io and Trey and Lonzo all out. Obviously now you bring in Okoro, who I think at this point projects to be the starter. But they looked really good with him out there. And I think he adds a element of like movement shooting that they don't really get from anyone else. I probably wouldn't like pay too much to keep him, but you look at some of these other players in the league who are like similar archetypes and like in the 8 to 12 million range, I feel like on a shorter term deal, he could provide some value.
I think he'll be back because again, continuity, we're going to return the same team as this year, just without Vooch. And paying everyone else more money.
Herter was 3-17 in preseason. He was terrible. I'm really concerned. I think out of those 17 shots, I think 14 of them made me want to throw my remote through the drywall. Like, they were selfish, contested shots. And I don't know the guy. I don't know him well. I agree with you, Will. He did really good when he came to the Bulls for most of his time last year. He's in a contract year. You never know how some guys react to that. I just thought he looked terrible in the preseason. So did other players that I happen to like, too. But I just hope he takes a little bit more time for good shots. I just thought he took a lot of bad shots in preseason. Who knows how people react in their last year of a deal. Kobe White.
I think Kobe will be back. I think – and actually that's like one of maybe the silver linings of him missing some time here is you get to really see how the team looks without him. Whether that means like finding more opportunity for some guys or just seeing how the group handles not really having like a primary scorer. I do think that this is valuable information gathering. But I don't think that Kobe's going to be getting a contract that the Bulls can't afford to keep. And so I'm not as worried about that as others. He will become an unrestricted free agent. Like that's going to happen because I don't think he's going to take his extension number. But I don't see anybody else. I don't see another team coming in and offering him one more money and two a bigger role to where the Bulls can't at least match that.
I'm excited for Kobe to miss three quarters of this year and to listen to AK in his end of season presser talk about how good the team played at the end of last year and how if only Kobe were healthy, we'd have won 55 games because that's what the record would have projected into. And how we're going to bring back everyone and now win 55 games next year.
Probably very prophetic here for Doug. Between this and the wrist injury for Collins, he's going to get a possible look at Northeast Idaho for prophecy school. Io DeSumo, what say you?
I also think I will be back. I think he is, you know, you look at some of these contracts that guys are getting around the league who play similar, you know, positions, you know, I don't think he's like in the Dyson Daniels camp of like, you know, almost defensive player of the year caliber. I don't think he's in like the Christian Brown. He just got 5 years, 125. Like, I think he's going to be in the 8 to 12, maybe $14 million a year range. And I think that's like really good money for him. And I think he means more to the Bulls than he would to anybody else. And they're going to keep him.
Do you think, question for Will, do you think that Io could get an extension done before free agency? I mean, like, we can definitely pay him enough, right? Like, we could offer him $20 million a year on an extension, if my math is right, around that number. Do you think we could get an extension done beforehand?
I think the only way you should look to get an extension done is if it's less than his cap hold, which is 14.28. So... frankly, like, I think if the Bulls offered him $14 million a year, I think he should take that. I think that, you know, anything around the mid-level is probably about right for him. And the reason I say less than his cap hold is because if you do want to keep him next year, you're using that low cap hold on the books, going over it to bring in players via free agency and then re-signing him. If it's less than his cap hold, the cap hit on the sheet for next summer will be lower, which will actually afford the Bulls more cap space. So if there's an offer there, I would take it if I were Io. But I think the Bulls like don't want to commit to anything right now. I think they're very much in this sort of stage in life where they're like, we cannot have any long-term money. We want to be as flexible as possible. We've made some bad decisions with contracts that have locked guys in that we then couldn't move. And we just don't want to sacrifice any of that flexibility, despite what some of the other moves that they've made this offseason would tell you.
I do love the way, Will, that you predicted AK to have the most boring offseason ever thus far. We're bringing back everyone but Vooch. Yeah, I agree with you, like, by the way. I think you're completely right, but that would be the most boring offseason ever.
And like they do want to have, we can finish this up first, but like they do want to have depth, and I think they have a lot of good players. The issue is that they just don't have a star player. And I think that if they bring everybody back, they still will have some money to be able to go out and do something. Maybe they get a good draft pick. I agree with you though. There's not a lot of easy avenues for them to really turn over the roster. I think they do fall in love with their own players a little bit too much. And then on top of it, like, there's not going to be any incredible players that like only want to join the Bulls that like put them in a situation where they do have to make some of those sacrifices.
You know, I asked Joe Cowley who the leader of the team was. He said Io, underrated Io. And I thought, you know, from the outside, it was clearly Kobe. Who do you feel the leader of this team is?
I think both of those guys have definitely stepped into that kind of a role. Like, they're both, like, way more... I guess Kobe's pretty, like, outgoing and, you know, talkative. Io, at least in his first couple of years, wasn't, but he really seems to be growing in that way. So I would say both of those two, yeah.
And, you know, Dale and Terry, last real quick ones. Dale and Terry, you think he'll be back?
Unless it's on, like, a minimum contract, I don't think so. I think the Bulls just need to open up. Like, Dale, by the way, like, one of my favorite people on the team, just absolutely great person, awesome to talk with. But I just think, you know, the team needs to... They have zero minimum contracts on their team right now. Like, they can spend a little bit more money on some of the players that actually play and then fill in the back end of the roster with, like, veteran minimum types. I think that would be a better use of their cap space. And probably same with Javon Carter.
Do you feel... Now, you're on this team. I thought they'd win 46, like I said, fifth seed if Kobe was healthy. I really think Kobe is going to take a big jump. Well, he's gone. And I really don't think he'll be back before Thanksgiving, maybe sometime between Thanksgiving and Christmas. I'm looking more at 33, 34. What do you think this team's going to finish in the pretty weak East now that you've been around it throughout the preseason?
My original prediction when I went on Dunked On, which I try to stick to even though that was pretty early on not early on in the offseason, but like early on before training camp, was 39 wins. And I'm just sticking with that because I kind of want to be consistent, but I do feel like the Kobe situation is like taking some air out of the sails. Like, no, he's not going to probably be out for like 30 games, but I mean, it's a tough start to the season. You know, I was looking at the schedule a couple of days ago, and it's just like there's a lot of tough games there to start the season. Detroit, Orlando, Atlanta, New York are five out of their six first games. They got Sacramento in there too, so maybe that's a win, but like it's tough. And like, I think the East is wide open, but you know, to me, it's like it's more wide open at the top, and actually it's a little bit deeper than people are maybe giving it credit for. Like, I do think there are probably 12 teams that could make the play-in or top 10. I still think the Bulls, just like due to the fact that they are going to try throughout the course of the entire season, whether they are 15 games under 500 after the deadline or not, I think that puts them in a position where they're going to be in the like mid-30s. And, you know, we'll see what happens with injuries with some of these other teams. But yeah, I'm sticking around the like mid to high 30s, I think. Just too much historical data to tell me that they're just simply not going to tank.
Doug, any comments?
No, I mean, that was about where I had them, you know, before the season started as well. I feel like I would ding them a few games just to be missing Kobe and Collins at the beginning of the year. I think both those guys are super important. So that's just bad luck, but same thing as Will said. Like, they're one of the few teams that will continue to try even when they should abandon and start aiming for the draft pick. And because of that, they're really unlikely to land in the 20s. And so I feel like the max downside is still probably mid 30s, low 30s. Like, I just can't see them pulling the plug. Maybe they will. Maybe this will be the year. Maybe this will be the year. They're just like, forget it. Let's tank. But we've not seen
it. I feel like the range was probably like 35 to 40 for me, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, or, you know, right around media day. Now I feel like it's probably 33 to 37. But I don't see them really having a ton of upside anymore. And I don't see them really having the, you know, wherewithal to go for the downside.
Hmm. I compare a lot of things that happened to me in life to the Bulls. And I was in Vegas last week. Do you gamble at all, Will?
You know,
play blackjack?
We go out to Vegas for Summer League every year. And, I'll play some blackjack, but I got to chill out on that. I'm losing too much money.
Okay. I'm basically the same way, but I'll occasionally sit at a $25 table. I went to Vegas last week. I sat at a $25 table. I won the first 16 hands.
In a row.
16 in a row. In a row. I went from $50 to $800+. It was one of the best strings I ever had, right? So things are going well. That I compare that to like the Bull signing, making the trade for Okoro. Is my 16 hands in a row.
I thought you were going to say when they finished.
That's how the season started. Okay. Well, no, it was when I got Okoro. So things are going great. The three people at the table knew what they were doing. All of a sudden, this dope walks in. You can tell he's a dope because he's got wearing a LeBron Lakers jersey. Sits down right next to us. The dealer is showing a king, and he gets a 16. What do you do? What are you supposed to do? What does everybody know who plays blackjack? What are you supposed to do on a 16 when a dealer has a king?
Got to hit it.
You got to hit it. He didn't hit it. I'm to his left. I draw the queen and bust. The guy next, and I hit a 13, and the guy next to me gets drawn an 8. So I would have had a 21. This guy did it 3 times in a row. We almost threw hands. So each one of those horrible instances was the Kobe White injury. Injury to Coral doesn't look good. This whole season has all these signs that, you know, it's not going right. And by the end of the night, you know, I forgot where my car was, couldn't find my rental car. It was one of the worst nights I've ever had. So I come out of there, you know, maybe up $50 after being up at 800 one time, and the whole thing's a disaster. That's where this is going. This bull season is like my week in Vegas, my night in Vegas. You see what I'm saying?
This is the least optimistic I've ever seen you, Doug.
Well, it's the truth. The only guy I'm excited about is Modest. Let me finish on that because you're already giving us 40 plus minutes. Modest Buzelis. Are you? I think you were in agreement with me. Like, we're putting way too much on him, but based on how he played in the preseason, I think maybe we're putting a little bit too little on him. Like, what do you think this goes? Where do you think it goes this year?
I still think we're putting a little too much on him, just because the hype has gotten a little off the rails. Like, once a lot of national media people start talking about him, I think that's, you know, obviously a good sign that the Bulls are getting some positive attention for a young player that they have. And to be fair, he was awesome in the preseason. I mean, he was scoring efficiently. He was scoring easily. He was blocking a ton of shots. I think he is still going to, you know, he's a work in progress. Like, he's still, I think, pretty raw. But the jump shot looks a lot better. His shot blocking instincts are really good. And he was just scoring so easily. Like, and it wasn't so much that he was, like, you know, creating a bunch of offense in isolation. It was really in the flow. Giddy was getting him easy shots in transition. He was grabbing and going. Just like really simple basketball. And I think that's what's going to make him successful. Once you try to overload him, I think, with, all right, we really need you to score us 25 a night because Kobe's out, I think that's where he could get in a little bit of trouble, because I don't think his half court scoring game, despite some of the, you know, skills that he has and like the bag that he has, I don't think his game is there yet. But I am really optimistic about his future, and I hope that he continues to play as well as he did, because, like, I mean, it really changes the whole vibe around the team when you have a player like that who's really who people are really talking about as, you know, somebody who could be a player. And I absolutely do think he can be. I just don't want to get so out of control that, like, if he has bad games, people start to get, you know, frustrated with him. I think that's counterproductive.
Can I toss in maybe one counterpoint? And generally, I've agreed with both of you on the same topic. But now, just thinking to myself and listening to you talk about it, I'm going to throw out one counter idea, which is that, like, if he's going to be a star, like a real star player, then I don't think you can put too much on him. Like, are we putting too much on Cooper Flagg? What are the expectations there? We putting too much on, like, Victor Wembanyama? Like, if he is going to be a real star player, throw it all on him. You know, let's see where it is. You know, it's like, it is what it is. We got nothing else going on. You know, like, I agree. Like, I'm not sure he's ready, but after watching him really kick some ass in preseason, I'm like, yeah, maybe I'm wrong. Let's go. Let's see what happens here. Yeah, I agree. He had, like, a lot of, you know, baskets in transition and stuff that maybe isn't going to scale so easily, but I'm for it just to find out. You know, like, if he's going to be a really great player, then, and I feel like maybe he'll surprise me. And, you know, he seems ready to give it a shot. We don't got much else going on. So, you know, I'd rather watch that than Javon Carter chuck up 30 misses a night. So, you know, let's just see what happens.
Last question. Well, I can't thank you enough for your time. This is awesome that you spent this time with Doug. Yeah. Well, but last question I did have for you, because I'm going to put this also on my son's high school podcast. Advice for anybody, you know, you got to the pinnacle here. You're covering Chicago Bulls, an NBA team. Your future is, you know, eventually probably with ESPN and national level. Like, what advice would you give to the kids who are listening to this, these high school kids? How do I get into this business, and what would you suggest?
Well, that's a really tough one. I feel like for me, it was just that I was so sort of obsessed with finding a way to do this thing that I really wanted to do that I was like willing to try everything and anything. And so I think like work ethic and just like desire to do it will, you know, force you to put yourself in situations where you have to like pick up new skills, where you have to be willing to try stuff. Like, I never wanted to like be a YouTube podcast guy, you know, like I wanted to write about the Bulls, and this just happened to be a way that I did it. So I think like saying yes to opportunities, working really hard, you know, taking a lot of advice and not feeling like any amount of work is like too much. I don't know. For me, it was just like getting lucky, but I think in a lot of ways you kind of have to like create your own luck. And so, yeah, I guess I would just credit that to like wanting to like learn and read and watch more videos about what's going on the basketball court, so I could learn how to apply that, talking with people who are much smarter than me about what's going on so that I could learn more about it and then apply that to my own work. And then also, I think this is kind of a common one, but just like finding a lane within whatever it is that you're trying to do and really making it your own and carving out a niche in that way. That just kind of like gives you sort of a platform to be able to like show that you can do something at a really high level, whether it's super niche or it's like a big thing. I think sort of carving out your own lane and becoming an expert in whatever field it is that you're hoping to become an expert in, like that I think really helped me. It was like, I want to be covering the Bulls in like in a way that people, you know, feel like they're learning something. And so I befriended a lot of people that were doing that same thing and did podcasts with them, and started, you know, watching more videos about what's going on X's and O's wise around the league and what does that mean for the Bulls. And this last couple of years, it was learning more about the salary cap and like how that affects things. And I think just kind of expanding your skill set in that way has been really helpful to me.
Thanks, Will. Great stuff. Will Gottlieb, ladies and gentlemen, one of the best, always been ultra kind to us. And we can't thank you enough. We're both huge fans and admirers of you, Will, and we just can't wait to see where your career continues to go. You're just a joy to spend time with, to read, and you made this bus better. Anytime you're always invited, and your old partner, Mark Kay, he always sits at the back, but we always ask him to come up to the front. It's always good to see you guys, you know, together too. Maybe we can do a show with the three legends and Mark sometime.
I would love that. But seriously, anytime. You guys always say like the nicest things about me and our show. So I really appreciate you. I love your guys' show. I don't miss an episode. And yeah, anytime you want me to come back on, anytime you need me to get in Mark's head for you, I'm happy to do that. Whatever it is.
Thank you, Will. You know, I'll just echo what Fred said. Certainly appreciate you taking the time with us. And yeah, go Bulls.
On that note, we'll bring the Big Red Bus in. Go Bulls.